Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Well, Biden fixed the NLRB. Now it's time to clean house at the FLRA. That's the Federal Labor Relations Authority, where union busters are at work. We'll explain. And today on the show, the Heat and Frost Insulators and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Welcome to the Wednesday, January 26th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Pete Almini is going to be our first guest on the show today. Longtime supporter and contributor to America's Workforce, also a sponsor, comes to us from the Heat and Frost Insulators, LMCT. Website is mechanicalinsulatorslmct.com. And what we're going to talk about today is a high-rise fire, very tragic fire, in New York City 2 weeks ago, which 17 people, including a number of children, died. And Pete says, I really hate to capitalize on this, but we need to get the information out on fire stopping. And he's done several shows about fire stopping, and he's going to zero in on that topic today because of what happened in New York. Now, that fire started on the third floor of a 19-story building. What got all the media attention, lack of fire doors. Well, that really didn't explain the whole story, and that's why Pete is coming on the show today to talk to us and you, the listener, and any of you that own a building, what needs to be done. And Pete, on his website, did a blog about this. And he's getting a lot of reaction. And one thing we're going to talk about today, what fire stop is, we'll obviously get into that, but also compartmentalization. When a fire breaks out in a compartmentalized structure, fire stopping helps keep the smoke and fire from spreading outside of a certain area. And if you can stop a fire from spreading, property damage drastically reduced and lives saved. We're going to get into all the details on this with Pete Almini. Later in the show, we're going to be checking in with Mike Dolan. Mike comes to us from the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where he serves as a legislative rep. He's also on the board of the Coalition for a Prosperous America. A couple things he's going to get into. Number one, the Buy American Council. You may recall when President Biden took office, he came out of the chute saying, you know what? We have to promote products made in the United States. Buy American products. Don't buy products overseas. So many jobs have disappeared. If you buy American products, you support American jobs. We're going to get into that. And also, we're going to talk about the supply chain. What's interesting is the incoming president, the new president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, Sean O'Brien, who is going to take office in March, was recently appointed by the Director of Commerce to the Advisory Committee on Supply Chain Competitiveness. Interesting role. The Teamsters have been a longtime critic of the supply chain in America. And we've done several shows on this. You may recall a show that we did with the truckers on the West Coast, because that's where the bottleneck has been. The Port of Los Angeles and the Port of Long Beach. You got a lot of truckers there, many of them immigrants, that have been taken advantage of by trucking companies. And what they did, they misclassified them. As a result, they're not getting paid. And you know what? If you're not getting paid, why bother waiting, right? So that is a big problem. If you raise the wages, things would change dramatically. Make them full-time employees, not independent contractors. So we'll get into that. with Mike Dolan as our second guest on the show. Speaking of the Teamsters, a judge at the National Labor Relations Board has found that CEMEX, that's the Ready Mix Concrete Company, had committed extraordinary violations in a recent union election in Las Vegas and California by, among other things, hiring a union-busting firm whom it paid over $1 million to suppress organizing efforts. The judge, again, this is a judge on the NLRB, ordered the reinstatement and back pay for wrongly terminated workers and access to job sites for Teamster organizers. CEMEX claims it did not violate any laws and that workers don't want a union, pointing to the election results showing the union lost by 13 votes. Okay, what do you expect from the company, right? Well, turns out that CEMEX hired a well-known union suppression firm called the Labor Relations Institute, and they spent over $1 million on consultants hired to convince the local cement truck drivers the union was not in their interest. Well, these consultants, the judge found, violated the law by telling workers CEMEX might simply choose to close the factories if a union was formed. How many times have you heard that, right? The managers also broke the law by telling workers not to speak to union organizers, inviting them to work elsewhere if they wanted a union, and asking why they were not wearing vote no paraphernalia ahead of the election. Boy, they pulled out all the stops, didn't they? There's more. They also wrongfully terminated Diana Ornelas, a cement truck driver and union supporter. The Teamsters are expected to file for another election, and if they do so, the remedies imposed by the NLRB judge are meant to, in his words, dissipate as much as possible the lingering atmosphere of fear that CEMEX created. Wow. Amazing what has happened at the National Labor Relations Board. Now, we have to take that another step further, and I want to share with you a story about our immigration judges in Washington, D.C. Well, they're actually in various cities around the country. In fact, in a couple of weeks, on February 9th, we are going to feature the president of the Immigration Judges Union. That's right. They have a union for immigration judges. Now, listen to this. In an attempt to bust the union that has represented and given voice to the nation's immigration judges for nearly a half a century. That's right. 50 years. I think it was 1971 they were formed. Two anti-union board members of the three-member Federal Labor Relations Authority, the FLRA, have voted to strip collective bargaining rights from the judges and their union. The two anti-union members issued the lawless decision against the wishes of both parties. Now, here's the deal. Last year, the U.S. Department of Justice reversed course and dropped legal efforts begun by, of course, the Trump administration to decertify the National Association of Immigration Judges. They are part of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. Comment here from Mimi Sankoff. Again, she's the president. This is a poorly reasoned decision and overrules the will of the parties. It is rooted in the majority FLRA board members' anti-union bent and reflects a deep desire to silence immigration judges. Ernest DeBester is chair of the board, and he pointed out in a dissenting opinion, again, three members, and he was the dissenter. He said the very petition that provided the vehicle for the majority to issue its underlying decision has been withdrawn by the DOJ. Nevertheless, the decision should come as no surprise. Turns out over the last 4 years, the board members, and here's their names, Colleen Duffy Kiko and James Abbott, these, again, are Trump appointees, they have repeatedly taken action without regard for or indeed even contrary to the party's positions or arguments. The president of the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers is Matt Biggs, and he said he's outraged that an agency as important to federal workers as the FLRA has no excuse, none, for continuing to maintain an anti-union majority more than a year into the Biden presidency. Now, 2 years ago, the DOJ petitioned the FLRA to decertify the union, all part of an effort to silence the judges and the union from speaking out about issues that related to due process, judicial independence, lack of resources, a case backlog. Their backlog right now, 1.6 million cases. Can you believe that? And at the time, Trump's attorney general, William Barr, claimed the judges were managers. Anything to keep them out of the union, right? Bottom line on this, we have some holdovers from the Trump administration. And there is an opportunity to eliminate them, pretty much like Biden got rid of Peter Robb on the National Labor Relations Authority. So I don't know what's going to happen here, but obviously there's a tug of war. Congress can fix this. And again, I want to call attention to an interview that's coming up in a couple of weeks. It's on our February 9th show. Mimi Sankov, the president of the Immigration Judges Union, will be joining us to explain what's going on with the judges and that backlog, which is atrocious, that has not been rectified. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, Pete Almini on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at uaw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always trying to connect people with employment. They got a job on their hands right now. So many people leaving their jobs, finding new ones, better benefits, better pay. You can find more at ulagency.org, ulagency.org. Before we get to Pete Almini, I just want to call to a reference here. Yesterday's show, we had Tommy Buffenbarger, longtime general president of the Machinist Union, and our independent labor voice, and he was talking about the possibility of a railroad worker strike. Well, that's not going to happen right away. A judge yesterday issued a temporary restraining order against the union, and we're talking about the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. The issue is a new attendance policy, very draconian policy, where workers are saying, hey, we can't work under these conditions. If you get an opportunity to listen to yesterday's show, awfradio.com, we have all the different platforms to check that out. But just to update you real quick, there's not going to be a strike right away. And if there were to be a strike, my gosh, the country would virtually be shut down. You think the supply chain issue is bad now? Wow. All right, let's go to our live line. Welcome one of our regulars, also a sponsor. That would be Mr. Pete Almini on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators. And we have a very, very good topic today, a topic that can really enlighten a lot of people and hopefully save lives. Hey, Pete, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, 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 my New Jersey guy. Hey, how's the weather over there? We got some frigid cold here. Are you getting some of that stuff over there in Jersey?
Absolutely. It's cold and wintry and gray, and we're getting set to handle a nor'easter. That's a big storm that develops off the ocean and brings moisture and mayhem inland. So we're getting ready for that.
Yeah, I see. That's going to hit, I think, like Friday, Saturday. So good luck on that one. Pete, when you have this bitter cold, oftentimes the furnace breaks down. People use space heaters, fires start. And I know you want to talk today about this high-rise fire that happened a couple of weeks ago in New York City. 17 people, including a number of children, died. And this is something that could have been prevented. Apparently, the media didn't explain the whole story. And you know what? That's why we have America's Workforce. So, Pete, it's all yours. What's the story here? What happened and what should have happened? Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Flash. Yes, 2 weeks ago, there was a horrific high-rise fire in New York City. And it's not just isolated to New York City. There's fires all over the country. In our cities all over the place. And we're just focusing in on this New York City fire because 17 people died. Hundreds were instantly homeless when this happened. It was a 19-story building. There was a space heater that was used on the third floor for whatever reason. The space heater was not properly attended to, and it was the reason why there was a fire in an apartment on the third floor. That alone is tragic enough. Why wasn't there proper heat for the tenants of the building? But that's a totally another subject.
Sure.
But the part we had to get to was talking about there was a fire on the third floor. How can smoke... And most people die in a fire because of smoke. How can smoke travel from the third floor all the way up to all of the 19 floors of this building? And it happened relatively fast. It happened so fast, obviously, people could not get out of the building in time. And when you look at a tragedy like this, there are many, many, many things that could have happened and could have been avoided. And the investigators are going through it right now to be able to point out some of the fallacies that happened. And without a doubt, Flash, this is something that should not have happened. There should not be a reason why smoke and flame travel throughout a building. Buildings are designed to contain smoke and fire, but it has to be contained in a way that, one, meets the code, and two, that are functionally or working. What did hit the press and what did get notoriety was the fact of the fire doors were not operating properly.
Mm-hmm.
And fire doors is part of the containment of a fire. You can contain a fire in a certain part of the building or in a particular room. The fancy word is compartmentalization, and that's designed to be able to isolate that fire. So flame and smoke cannot migrate out of that containment. Fire doors. Most people are familiar with fire doors. When you go into a large building, a hotel, a high-rise building, a hospital, and you're walking down that main corridor, and you see these big, massive doors, and they're open. And they're held open by usually a magnet that's holding the door open. When the fire alarm goes off, the magnet releases the doors automatically close. And the doors are fire rated, and you can see there's rubber seals around it. And the purpose of the door is to hold back fire and also be able to hold back smoke. So smoke and flame does not travel down the hallway. And this is what's getting a lot of notoriety in this unfortunate accident that killed 17 people. The fire doors were not working properly, or they were propped open, or they weren't there, and they are looking at that. That leads, and that raised my eyebrows immensely, because at Flash, we've been on your program now many times talking about the importance of fire stopping and smoke seal. And this is the sealing of these compartments, these fire rated walls, from one compartment to another. The fire doors are one part of it. Another part of it is what we talk about with fire stopping. Just because the doors are there, there may be other ways that fire and smoke can be admitted throughout the building. The as we discussed many times. Keep in mind, just think about this one fire, this 19-story building. The fire was on the third floor.
Yeah.
Most of the people that died didn't die from flame. They died from smoke inhalation, several floors up. There was more migration of smoke went through this building than just the lack of fire doors being operating properly. And again, the investigation will show exactly how the smoke migrated up throughout those floors. But and whether it be a building in New York City or a building in Baltimore or a building in Los Angeles, it's the same thing, that the fire stop technology and industry has already been established. We have to have the mindset and the awareness to be able to enforce the existing building codes that are already there. The laws are there to be able to have these systems in place in our buildings. But we have to do a better job of enforcing these laws, inspecting these codes, these requirements. If people can understand the importance of the fire-rated doors and doors closing automatically, then you understand the importance of containing the fire and the smoke in a compartment in a building. And if you understand all that, you have to understand what's above that drop ceiling. When pipes and cables, electrical lines, HVAC ducts are traveling above those ceilings, they also go from room to room on the floor and also go from floor to floor to floor. You have chases, you have elevator shafts, you have HVAC airways that all have to be sealed to prevent the transfer of smoke throughout the building. The technology is there. The industry is there. We, as the mechanical insulators, we have trained professional people that know how to install these fire stop systems. More importantly, or just as important, I should say, we have quality licensed contractors that are licensed to be able to put these fire stop systems in, install them with proper qualified people to be able to ensure that they meet the requirements of how these fire stop systems are tested. The most dangerous thing we can do is people to go out to the hardware store and the big box stores, because you can buy these fire stop products on the shelf. And people may be installing them on their own, or having a contractor that has good intentions, but they're not installing it correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, just because you put the materials in there doesn't mean it's going to work. I mean, right. And the same token, you can buy electrical wire and a service panel at the big box stores too, and put that in your home without having a licensed electrician to do it. It's not advised, because if you do it wrong, well, you also may have a fire because of the products that you bought and you installed them incorrectly. Same thing holds true for our fire stop systems.
So in this case, if it was sealed properly, we wouldn't be talking about 17 people dying. Is that what I'm hearing in this conversation?
You are correct. If the compartments in that building worked properly, then the migration of smoke would not have happened in that building. And it's hard to say how would it have changed the outcome of it, but rest assured, there would not be 17 people dead because of it. And the fire doors have to work. The fire stop systems have to be installed. But one thing we have to keep in mind, when you look at fire protection and reducing fires in the building, it's not just a single area that you focus on. There are four major areas that all have to be addressed, all have equal importance. Number one is education and prevention, understanding what you should do and shouldn't do to start fires. And that goes into the space heater issue. When we started this, you talked about when there's cold weather and there's not enough proper heat in the building. Well, people have to stay warm. It's one of the fundamentals of human nature. You got to generate heat somehow. And the space heater, sometimes you get the wrong space heater. Sometimes people, unfortunately, even have to use their oven to be able to heat their apartment. But education and prevention, these are the things that have to be understood. The other part is detection. The earlier detection of a fire and smoke is very important to be able to eliminate that spread, obviously. The third part is suppression. Suppression is when the fire starts, how soon can it be extinguished? And the argument of sprinkler systems should be working, should be installed, it should be inspected. Sprinkler systems is obviously, again, a major part, but the sprinkler systems will put the fire out. And the fourth one is containment. As we've been talking, as I talk about a lot with fire stopping, and also the use of fire doors. The combination of all of those four items all working together is how you are able to control and prevent fires in the building. They all are important, and they all have to be implemented simultaneously.
Pete, I feel like I'm in one of your classes right now. This is a great, great lesson for so many people listening. Pete Almini joining us on our live line on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators, LMCT, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. That blog, is that on your website, the Mechanical Insulators website?
Yes, it is. Yes,
good,
it is.
Good, good, good. Yeah, those of you listening, you might want to check it out. Very, very well written. We'll continue our conversation with Pete. Later in the show, Mike Dolan will be joining us. He's a legislative rep on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. We're going to talk about buying American goods and an update on the supply chain. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. Keep those 5-star ratings coming. Greatly appreciated there. Let's go back to our live line. Each and every month, we check in with Pete Almini on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators. Got to check out the website, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. And Pete wrote a blog that's getting a lot of national attention. All has to do with that tragic high-rise fire in New York City a couple of weeks ago. 17 people, including a number of children, died. And if you're just checking in with us right now, the fire doors got a lot of media attention. And granted, the fire doors didn't work properly, but there's more to the story. And that's what we're talking to Pete about today. We're talking about fire stopping, containing fires, educating the public, and updating our laws. Now, Pete, you indicated in the first segment that there's laws on the books, there's codes. And boy, I tell you, there's probably a lot of owners that are not following those codes. I mean, you think about how many buildings there are in the country. But again, we can also improve the laws. So where are we with all that in America today? Talk to me about that, Pete.
Yeah, it's a great question. There are building codes and there are fire codes. Many times they overlap, achieving the same result, but they are there in existence. The idea of compartmentalization is something that is not new. Buildings are engineered and architects designed to have the compartments within the building to be able to stop the migration. They have to make sure that they follow the building codes to make sure that they're installed and the fire rated walls are installed, and they have to be inspected by the local authorities. And we have to make sure that that is done. Hopefully, this can bring some awareness to some lawmakers that emphasis on these items have to be inspected properly, have to be inspected by people that are properly trained. One thing that we do and we have been doing with the LMCT, we love to be able to train and inform fire inspectors. We pull them together when they want to have this education. We have experts that are properly qualified and actually teach the fire inspectors to be able to what to look for on these fire stop systems. And it's a very specialized craft. It's a very specialized service. And what we want to be able to do is be able to help and assist the fire inspectors and the fire marshals to give them a good education of what to look for with these fire stop systems. Yes, they have to inspect the fire doors, but, you know, let's pop off the ceiling tiles and let's look at these penetrations going through a fire rated wall. And we would help the fire inspectors to be able to understand that industry a little bit more than they may already know. I can only imagine the workload that and a responsibility that are put on these inspectors. And it's easy to point fingers, and nobody's pointing fingers, but we want to be able to help them. We want to be able to assist them and be able to give them the knowledge that they need to properly inspect this. We need our lawmakers to develop laws that are going to enhance and improve these inspections. And you're right. Building owners should be aware of this. Insurance companies should be aware of this. You know, I'm sure the building in the Bronx, that building owner now and that insurance company now are getting an education on fire containment and fire suppression. and all of those 4 points that I mentioned before about how to prevent a fire. They're getting an education now. But unfortunately, guess what? It's too late. People yep. died. You know, our industry has the technology. We have the proper people to install it. We have the contractors that know what they're doing. These are the experts. And the money is there for these buildings to have this installed. We have to change the mindset. We are improve the mindset. We have to make people to understand that we need these systems installed, all of these systems to prevent fires. This is the year 2022. This technology of reducing the spread of fire and reducing fire has been around for decades. We have to implement this, not partially, not some of it, not stuff that's easily to be seen, but 100%. 100% of prevention, detection, suppression, and containment. We need our lawmakers to help us out, to make laws, to make people, building owners, insurance companies, follow the laws that are already on the books. We have to have better enforcement.
Pete, I want to pick up on the insurance companies, and you think about how powerful they are. Insurance companies, I often say this on the show, they're pretty much running everything. I mean, they take in a lot of money, and then when something happens, they don't dole it out. I mean, take a look at medical insurance. Oh, no, we're not going to cover that claim. They're so good at doing that. Now, with that being the case, wouldn't you think that they would be a powerful lobby on Capitol Hill to make sure that these building owners are living up to their codes, make sure that there's more laws on the books? I don't know how many more laws they could put on the books, but you would think that they would be extremely vocal on this subject, especially now with lives being lost. What's your take on that?
Absolutely. I'm very passionate about involving the insurance companies. And my passion comes from another part of construction that I'm very familiar with, and that's safety, and that's OSHA. Construction safety is paramount, especially with all of our building crafts. That's something that we teach a lot in the apprenticeship programs. We work hand in hand with our contractors, and we want our men and women in construction to be safe. And we work with OSHA to be able to make sure we meet, or in many cases even exceed, the minimum safety requirements. But the thing that really drives the OSHA requirements on the construction site is not the OSHA violations, although they can be powerful. But what really drives the OSHA requirements and the citations is that when an employer gets a construction employer gets an OSHA violation, you know, okay, they pay the violation. But what people don't realize is that construction contractor liability insurance now is going to increase substantially.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes it difficult for a construction company to be able to make up that money, because now they have to put that cost on future jobs. That cost goes on to future jobs. It's harder for them to have a lower bid. So what has happened over the last 50 years, construction companies don't want that to happen. They don't want the violations. They don't want the insurance increase. And they want to make the job safe. That works out good for the men and women working on the sites, because they're working safer. Right. And the numbers have been proven that. And what, in my opinion, what has drove that industry, safety and health industry, has been the insurance companies. And same thing as when you drive your car. When you get a speeding ticket, you know, but depending upon what the ticket is, it's maybe $100. Maybe it's $200. You may not think that's a big deal. However, if your insurance company is going to increase your rates over the next 5 years for $1,000. Wow. That $200 speeding ticket just came into a major, major impact on your personal finances.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing happens in construction with our contractors, and the same thing should happen, I believe, with the insurance companies that insure these buildings. They should make sure that the fire doors are working. They should make sure that the fire stop systems are installed by a properly qualified, competent, licensed contractor. And the people installing those systems are also properly trained and certified. That's the responsibility I believe the insurance companies have to step up to.
Well said, Pete. And at this juncture, I want to give a plug to the insulators, insulators.org. Those of you listening right now, if you are now interested in mechanical insulation, we're talking about saving lives. And as Pete indicated, it has to be done the right way. And that's why we have solid apprenticeship programs in America, and the insulators do a great job on that. Insulators.org. Pete, really good topic today. Hard-hitting topic. I'm glad you did the blog. Definitely check that out on Pete's blog here. That's Mechanical Insulators, LMCT, referencing the tragic fire at a high-rise in New York City 2 weeks ago. Lives could have been saved. No doubt about that. Pete, you take care, my friend, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you, Flash. You take care now. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mike Dolan on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Washington right now. Joining us on our live line is Mr. Mike Dolan. He's a legislative rep with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. He's also on the board for the Coalition for a Prosperous America. You might want to check them out at prosperousamerica.com. We've had a number of their writers on the show over the years. And, Mike, you know what I like about the CPA? By the way, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks so much for having me back, Flash. I've been enjoying your show a lot. I'm a regular podcast listener, and it's good to talk to you this afternoon.
I appreciate that. You know, the CPA, the Coalition, how long have you been on that board?
Wow. Since pretty much the beginning. I mean, like maybe 10 years now.
Is that right?
A bunch of different congresses. They're a great group, and I'm glad that you and those guys, they do a lot of good research, that, and they're able to share that with your listeners.
And it's good that they have a labor rep on the board. And what I like about them, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, they'll call you out. If you're not doing the right trade policy, you know what? We're going to call you out, and we're going to tell you better fix it. You know, if you're not going to be on the bus, you better get off the bus. Get it off right away, and we're going to make things happen. So I like that. I like what they do over there. Let's talk about the Buy America situation. I know the Teamsters, well, Biden started off his presidency. You got to buy American products. Makes sense. You buy American products, you're supporting American jobs. So talk to me about the Teamsters on this issue, Mike.
Well, you know, as North America's supply chain union, you know, at the ports and on the rails and all the rest, but also in manufacturing, our food processing, our cannery workers out in California, Buy America is a big priority, always has been for General President Hoffa, and I imagine will be as well for the incoming General President, Sean O'Brien, who's joining us soon. It's always been a big priority, as it is really for, well, everybody in the labor movement, particularly on the industrial side. I want to just correct one quick thing. You know, I'm not the only labor guy on the Coalition for Prosperous America. The AFL-CIO, Industrial Trades Council, is represented as well. My brother Brad Markell comes out of the UAW, is the other labor guy, and he's the labor co-chair for CPA. So to your point, you know, that the broad, you know, continuum of business and labor and family farm, farmer, rancher interests on the board of the CPA is what makes, I think, the CPA most effective as a fair trade coalition in Washington, D.C. And to your other point, as you and I have discussed before, really, trade policy and globalization, it's one of those issues that really does cut across party lines. And so on behalf of the Teamsters and all the supply chains, obviously we want to keep the pressure on both sides of the aisle in all the different administrations, which is, you know, what I've been doing for the Teamsters for over 10 years and with CPA for better part of a decade is, you know, talking on both sides of the aisle in Republican and Democratic administrations is as well, advancing Buy American. So now here we are in the Biden administration, and this is where some real progress is happening. And it's really exciting for all of us who care about Made in America. In fact, right now I'm looking at a website, the Made in America website. Uh-huh. And I recommend it to your listeners, madeinamerica.gov. Madeinamerica.gov. This is the brainchild and the new structure that Celeste Drake, who comes out of the AFL-CIO and is the Buy America director there in the administration, and she set it up. You can click on to view waivers. There's a level of transparency and a commitment from this administration around Made in America and on Buy America policies that we have never ever seen, and it's very refreshing. The Teamsters are, you know, obviously very supportive.
Madeinamerica.gov. That's the website to go to?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Future Made in America, and I recommend it to you and your listeners. It really does, it's the manifestation of the, really with the executive order, Biden's executive order, almost a year ago, last spring, right? His original executive order, on which you and I have discussed. And this is its manifestation, the transparency on the waivers and the commitment throughout. So it's The new news is last week, Celeste and the White House created a new Made in America Council, which is an interagency approach, right? So that Celeste and Biden, and they can help all the different federal agencies meet their obligations under the Made in America, the Buy America executive order from last year. So real progress on this front, and I think that it's going to inure to the benefit of workers throughout the supply chains and in all the manufacturing industries. So it's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I want to get into the supply chain, but you know, Mike, that's why we bring people like you to the show, because we hear about these executive orders, but we don't hear what happens after that. So what we're hearing on this show is the implementation of that executive order. So things are happening. Good things are happening. So let's get into the supply chain. And thank you for correcting me. I didn't know that there were more labor members on the CPA board. So that's good to hear as well. Talk to me about the supply chain. I'm hearing the incoming president, that would be Mr. Sean O'Brien, who I believe takes office in March, just got appointed to, what is this, the Advisory Committee of Supply Chain Competitiveness. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. It is. So he got a letter recently, Sean O'Brien. He's out of Local 25 up in Boston and is the general president-elect, right, of the Teamsters. And he was appointed just like 2 weeks ago, very recently, to this new advisory committee at the Department of Commerce, right? The International Trade Administration, which is part of commerce, and appointed to this supply chain committee. And I'll just mention, when we're talking about, you know, other labor representation in these important committees and then these important decision making, you know, forums, Lee Schuler, the president of AFL-CIO, was also appointed to the Advisory Committee on Supply Chain Competitiveness. Now, obviously, there's a lot of employer groups, you know, on this committee as well. You can go look at the roster. It's online. So, you know, UPS and FedEx and, you know, the American Trucking Association. So a lot of employer groups are on there as well. But in keeping with the Biden administration's focus on worker-centric policy, particularly in these supply chain issues, big issues these days. Everybody's talking about the supply chains, that the labor's voice is represented, labor's voice is heard. And so we're very excited that General President-elect Sean O'Brien will be joining President Schuler on this committee. And I'm looking forward to seeing how this works in with all the other Buy America stuff that we're talking about. But it's all part of the same commitment by this administration to pro-worker, Buy American, Made in America policies, both in manufacture and in services throughout all the supply chains where the Teamsters are, you know, where we have members.
Mike, we heard a lot about the bottleneck out on the West Coast ports, Los Angeles, Long Beach, and that was part of the general discussion on the supply chain mess.
That's right.
The fact that we have not heard about that, I'm just wondering, it sounds like maybe that's getting better out there. What are you hearing?
Well, it's not getting worse at this point. Obviously, as the administration moves more towards a 24/7 operations, and that's been part of the story, the evolution on this issue, is at ports like Long Beach and L.A., Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, was out there recently with Ron Herrera of our ports division out in Los Angeles on stage talking about how to work around the bottleneck. But the issue that's important for your listeners to consider here is that when they talk about the truck driver shortage, that's part of this bottleneck problem, part of the supply chain crisis, I'm air quotes on the crisis. You know, the thing that your listeners need to understand is that they don't ever talk about the misclassification of the truck drivers in those ports. They don't talk about pay and benefits and working conditions for truck drivers. And really, it's on the ATA and the others to prove that there's a truck driver shortage. And the way you prove that, Flash, is by offering more money, more pay, better working conditions to truck drivers. And we'll see how long the so-called shortage is going to be a part of the supply chain problem. So to your question, it's not getting worse. We think it's getting better, and we're very glad to be at the table in helping determine these, you know, what the solutions are long term.
Let's imagine when you raise wages how things change, huh?
Well, it's basic labor market economics, right? And so there's 80,000, you know, truck driver shortage. Well, try raising wages, right? Yeah. And having good union contracts and see how long that shortage lasts. I mean, just do the math.
Yeah. Don't make them independent contractors. Okay. Yeah, things can change dramatically almost overnight. All right. Yeah. Mike Dolan, I always appreciate you coming to the table. Mike Dolan, legislative rep on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, also on the board of the Coalition for a Prosperous America. And we all want a prosperous America. No doubt about that. You take care. Stay safe, my brother. Okay.
Thanks, Flash. Good to talk to you.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Bill Samuel, Legislative Coordinator, Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO and the Amalgamated Transit Union. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.